Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for the Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we just watched season 5, episode 4, entitled The Sons of the Harpy. What'd you think of this?
I'm a ship capsized at sea. I hope I can swim ashore. I don't know what the hell's going on. Sir Barristan might be dead.
Yep.
Grey Worm might be dead. Mm-hmm. Jesus. That's a gut punch.
Yeah. Wars are being started.
Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of shit happening in this episode.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like maybe Game of Thrones this season had not been as eventful as I wanted it to be after coming off of last season, every single episode was
sure.
Like major character death.
Yeah.
Here's the retribution we want to see on Joffrey. Like,
yeah,
all of this stuff happened.
No, it's going to be hard to top last season because every 2 to 3 episodes there was a finale worthy climax.
I thought this finale of this episode was pretty good. The last.
Yeah, it's not something I wanted to see though. And it's.
No, but it was awesome.
And I don't know. I'm shocked. It seems like they're both dead. You know, giving medieval technology and medicine and the amount of stabbing that went on and the age, especially of Barristan.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's dead, he went out like a badass.
They did. I was worried going into that battle that, oh, this guy's going to look like he's 50 years old.
No, he
did.
He pulled a Yoda. He was fast.
I don't know if it was just between cuts, he would just be huffing and puffing like an old man and then bring it for the shot. But
like the man said in season 1, even now I could cut you down like so much butter.
Yeah, it totally worked for me. How do you feel if they're both dead?
I'm shocked.
As a book
because,
reader, I'm sure you have knowledge, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, so these guys, I don't know what to do here.
If they're both
everything's
dead,
mildly interesting. Go to hell, Jim Jones. It's all mildly interesting. For me, the grief is too near. I'm pulling a Legolas here. I don't know what to say. I'm shocked.
I'm excited. It shakes things up. So
it certainly does.
So this might be, you know, the key that Dany needs to unlock Dario being awesome.
Because it seems
the way that they set up him knowing how to hunt these Sons of the Harpy is perfect now if both of these guys are dead.
And it also kind of greases the wheels to get Ser Jorah and Tyrion back in her good graces because she is now down 2 badasses and 1 seasoned advisor. Although, again, we've said that, you know, Selmy is a warrior more than a... someone that gives counsel, but you know, he's lived a long and interesting life.
Yeah.
There was a lot of really great character scenes. For him and Daenerys talking about her brother.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first 2 episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
I thought Stannis and Shireen was fantastic and very true to what I understand to be Stannis' character.
Okay.
Like, he does have a heart. It's just really buried deep, and he doesn't know exactly how to express it.
He's more concerned with where the piece on the map goes
most
of the time, but he let his guard down here.
Yeah. And I like Jorah and Tyrion. That seems to be – I mean, I enjoyed their interactions surprisingly more than I enjoyed him and Varys. We don't know what the hell happened to Varys. Mm.
No.
This episode.
Varys is probably, I would say, pulling his hair out, running around, looking for Tyrion, but...
Is it possible that Varys and Ser Jorah were in this somehow together?
Man, I've considered the possibility that the road to Meereen is, in fact, Jorah, and that's who he's talking about and what he's talking about. But the way it goes down didn't feel like that.
You're right.
And the way Varys reacts to Tyrion leaving the room...
Yes,
in that last episode, doesn't feel like that was a plan.
That's the evidence against.
Yeah.
The evidence for is of course, Jorah is just kind of stone-faced anyway, but he had gave really no reaction to Tyrion's right-on guesses about who he was and his relationship. And I also like that's a great scene for Tyrion because it shows you, in the first time in a long time, just how smart he is. He's kind of like Sherlock Holmes and all this stuff.
It was great. So,
I mean,
I don't know if his
mind
plan
is reeling. I don't.
I'm torn by what Tyrion says. I think it's maybe the best plan he could possibly come up with, even if it's not a great one.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Jorah doesn't have a lot of options at this point.
I guess
he could go back to King's Landing and try to deal with Cersei, but that.
I mean, he loves Daenerys, and he thinks she'll be a good queen, so he's got to do something to work that angle or die trying, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, as Tyrion points out, not the world's greatest plan, and it could easily go the other way for him, but man.
I wonder how much of that is Tyrion being like, you know, I'm a smooth talker, and you get me in a room with Dany, she's probably not going to take your side because you're already on the outs.
Yeah.
I can talk circles around you.
Sure.
I don't know.
I'm better
not
with
sure.
women. I'm. It's a pretty good promise.
Yeah. Yeah. The other interesting thing, or at least what I feel is probably the second most interesting thing in this episode, are the sparrows.
Sure.
Speaking of letting people off the leash.
Sure.
Wow. They wreak some havoc in King's Landing.
They do.
At Cersei's behest, obviously.
And we see now what Cersei's not so long con was, because this all took place in a few episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is her grand scheme to get revenge, is to imprison Loras.
Yeah.
On, you know, charges of homosexuality. It seems extremely foolhardy to rearm. I mean, you know, he talks about that they haven't been armed for 2 centuries. Well, the reason, I mean, there's some backstory if you want to look it up. But the reason it is it's a bad idea to give fanatics a bunch of weapons and official permission to go, as you say, wreak havoc. It's just, that was put down a long, long time ago because the king's like, this is ridiculous. This is bullshit. And she has set these guys loose on King's Landing and, in fact, the whole realm. I also wonder because, you know, when the king went to confront the High Sparrow, he was indisposed. My wheel started spinning. I wonder if, if we think about the last we – our first impressions of the High Sparrow, that he kind of wasn't on board with the whole wanton – you know, he said, you know, the lance could have been better directed, right?
Yeah.
It feels like this is something that he wouldn't sanction, this kind of wanton destruction and killing, even if people were guilty. So I wonder if he has been deposed somehow or he's in a prison himself because fanatics – he's not fanatic enough for the fanatics.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, especially with what's his name? The dude mixed up with Robert Baratheon.
Lancel?
Lancel, yeah. Especially with him getting this symbol cut into his head. I know that's kind of just a thematic thing they're doing. Yeah. They're showing, look, these people are fanatic and look how crazy they are. And they're all getting these symbols, but like he's kind of if there's another leader beside the High Sparrow, it felt like him to me.
Yeah. Well, he's got the – I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's such a thin line. You know, you see anytime these charismatic cult leaders, there's a thin line between being pious and righteous and being crazy and power hungry.
Yeah.
It's like what – it's you can say you're nobody and all that as much as you want, but when someone gives you a lot of power and you've got these people that are willing and wanting to be led – that's a temptation not many people can withstand. So whether this High Sparrow is just really showing his true colors and true feelings, or whether like a more extreme element like Lancel is taking over, that's good drama.
Yeah, I think so. What about Jaime and Bronn roadshow?
I thought it was
fun.
I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's cool to see Bronn being a badass. It was cool to see Jaime get a first kill I think since he lost his hand, really.
I think so, yeah.
And it was kind of a funny reminds me of Will Smith from I, Robot little moment where it's like, you, just when you forgot that he doesn't have the real fake hand, it's like, oh, yeah. it's surprisingly handy.
And I think he forgot it too, right?
Yeah, like it's like a reflex.
He puts his hand up, he's just like,
sure,
I want to deflect this from my core.
Yeah.
But then it gets stopped. That was cool.
Makes me wonder why he doesn't have like some kind of buckler or small shield strap. Like, I wonder if
like
he'll learn from this.
Inspector Gadget sort of attachment thing.
Not an attachment, but like if you can't do anything with your hand. Mm-hmm. And if I was Braun, I'd be like, you can shovel. You can shovel. Like, dogs don't, you know, like, you that's a
so
little,
just get
that's
down
a
there
trawl.
And dig.
Yeah, that's a okay. garden trawl, but you get down here with me, you bastard. No, I mean, like, I wonder if he'll learn from this and, like, try to fashion some kind of attachment to where he can't hold it, but he can, like, strap it on or something. Hmm. Because he might as well do something with it.
Yeah. It's much harder to block when it's just a fake hand.
Surprised at how bad Jamie is at fighting still. With as much kind of training and stuff that they've undergone. But
yeah, I mean, they made it a point that, you know, he's not good anymore.
No.
And even before this episode, they've made that point, I think. So I don't know what I was expecting there, but it felt right.
What did you think of the Sand Snakes?
Yeah, the Sand Snakes, I don't know. So apparently Alara is the mother of these girls. I don't know how much backstory I can really go into.
That's
here,
I don't know how much they're actually staying true to the books and how much they're remixing some of these characters, because I do think they made it clear that Obara is not her daughter. That's the big spear wielding one that talked about Oberyn coming to take her to court from her mother.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is, they're all Oberyn's daughters.
Okay.
And they're all very personally loyal to him, and they love their father. And they're all very, I mean, the other thing I think you're supposed to get is they all have kind of different approaches of honoring his legacy. And, you know, it's like they're, and I think that's going to be fun to experience and play with too.
Yeah, I can't remember if the episode actually says that these are the Sand Snakes, but
it doesn't. But like, we missed.
There's a lot to infer there.
I think we didn't come out and make all the connections because we were wondering if, you know, like if we could divine whether the Sand Snakes were Oberyn's daughter. But someone emailed me and said that no, Ilara said, you know, it's like the Sand Snakes are loyal to their father and they're with me. Okay, that pretty much means the Sand Snakes, and it makes sense. You know, they're called that because their all last name is Sand, because they're all bastards, and the Snakes because obviously Oberyn's the Red Viper of Dorne. So,
okay,
very clever.
But anyway,
he's got his own little Fox Force 5,
apparently,
sprung from his loins, and I think that's kind of awesome.
And they're getting ready to go to war without an army. What that means exactly, I'm not certain.
It
probably means some political maneuvering, some assassinations, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, it seems like their plan was pretty clear. They're going to go murder Marcella Baratheon slash Lannister and provoke a war, which will probably do it.
Probably so, yeah.
And Jaime's trying to do the same, except he's trying to kidnap and like a commando mission, because I guess if Jaime Lannister did it, that's probably going to provoke a war. Whereas if two unnamed bandits went, it makes actually Dorne look bad, and you know, the Lannisters would have some hand in a relationship, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, Cersei can get all self-righteous. So you let our daughter escape or be kidnapped or whatever.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's that's pretty fascinating. I like how Dorne is positioned, because we got Prince Thorin counseling reason and caution and patience, and we got the Sand Snakes and Alara counseling war, and we got Jaime with his commando raid. Everything's very precarious and interesting.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
You know what I think is a bad idea?
What?
Littlefinger going back to King's Landing. I think this might be the last chapter of Littlefinger's story.
That is mildly interesting, Jim.
We just saw the Sons of the Harpy bust up all of his whorehouses.
Well, no, you saw the Faith Militant. The Sons of the Harpy, Sons of the Harpy were busting up Daenerys' whorehouses.
Yes, you're right. The Sparrows is what I meant. We just saw them do that. That seems like a bad omen for Littlefinger going back there.
But
I know that they weren't actually after Littlefinger per se.
No.
But man, I can't help but imagine.
I also wonder how much of his money, his like financial base, is all wrapped up in that. So he might be wanting to come back anyway. I'm very curious to see what Cersei wants to say to him.
Yeah. What that note was all about.
Yeah, like I still can't figure that out. And I'm nervous about Littlefinger leaving Sansa without any protection there. But
yeah,
she seems, that scene in the crypt is another fantastic character piece. And what did you make of that whole speech about Lyanna Stark, et cetera?
I mean, it seemed to me, you know, it's just talking her into what he's got to go do and what she's supposed to do. I mean,
okay.
I feel like this is still part of Littlefinger's plan, obviously. Sansa is mostly on board with Littlefinger at this point.
But what are we supposed to take away from the story about the tourney at Harrenhal and, you know, him passing? I mean,
I don't know. Okay. For an instant cast, I have no fucking idea.
Gotcha. All right.
I'll have to go. I don't even recall most of that scene.
Okay.
So
what else do we want to talk about Sansa? Because it seems like he set her up into a win-win situation, like either Lannister.
Kind of, unless she's killed in the battle.
That's the thing I was thinking the whole time. It's like, you know,
there's going
catapults start getting launched and scorpions and all that stuff. Like, people die. People die in war.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Boltons could just do it for being bloody-minded.
But, and it's the one option they don't consider in that conversation, which makes me worry.
But I think, do you think that's because Sansa is inexperienced and naive enough? But she lived through the potential sack of King's Landing, where Cersei and Shay and everybody was like, well, we got the poison wine ready, girls. Like, we're ready to go down with the ship. I feel like that she should be a little bit more concerned about that.
I think so, too. And I think it might be a little bit of misdirection.
Yeah.
You know, let's bring up these two options. This third one's on the table, but we're not going to talk about it.
Sure.
I'm a little worried.
How do you think Tommen's feeling about now? Like, he was on Cloud 9 last episode, and now it's like, oh, God, all these women in my life are driving me crazy.
Yeah, he's got to be a little disappointed that Marjorie's going away at this point.
She's smart, though.
Yeah. Yeah, she knows things are about to happen.
What do you think? I'm kind of interested in seeing what her grandmother makes of this.
Yeah, she's definitely the mastermind of the family.
And also, like, is Cersei sending off Mace Tyrell to die?
Like, I think so.
That was very ominous, because Sir Meryn Trant is kind of like the skulkiest, underhanded of the... I mean, we're supposed to hate him as a King's Guardian, you know? He's the one slapping Sansa around. He's the one that's always... he seems like a bully. I could just totally see him, Mace Tyrell, befalling a horrible, tragic accident on the way to Braavos.
That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
And Mace being an idiot makes it kind of funny that he's honored by this, you know. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's all out war on Marjorie at this
point. That was
like,
interesting...
I knew that last episode's, you know, cowing to Marjorie was not legitimate. It was a ruse.
There's a lot of interesting parallels in this. Cersei's small council growing smaller by her design. Daenerys' small council growing smaller because of attrition. You know, Melisandre talking about the power in Jon Snow's blood and her wanting to suck it out with vagina magic.
God.
And then, you know, essentially Littlefinger giving the same speech to Sansa. And he kissed her full on the lips. And she said something significant, like, the next time you see me, I suppose I'll be a married woman. Mm-hmm. And then they had like an enigmatic look between the two, which is... You know, that's that the whole relationship is fucking weird anyway.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, there's a I had a couple more in mind about the you know, symmetries and stuff we're seeing, and I can't recall them. I'll have them for the full cast. But I thought there was a lot of really nice symbolic and practical symmetries in this episode. And just a lot happened. I mean, I feel like I watched two episodes of Game of Thrones. As much stuff actually happened after the last few kind of slower episodes.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a good episode.
You think Dany's any closer to opening up those pits?
Man.
I mean, she seems pretty...
I think she is. I mean, I don't know why they would keep going back to this well if they weren't going to deal with it in some way.
The thing is, now it's like it's... The thing with the Sons of Harpies is I feel like that she's going to be even more stiff-necked because now it's like you've got the element of cave... She already finds a person distasteful and immoral, and now you got the element of we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, she's also lost kind of her two advisors that would probably be, I mean, because obviously Dario doesn't give a shit. He's
pro-pit.
No,
he wants them back open, yeah.
You know, the Lorak is all pro-pit.
Yeah.
So if
she killed the slave who wasn't.
If, in fact, Selmy and, you know, Grey Worm are dead, then... There might be no brakes on this train anymore.
Yeah, could be. Could be. I don't know. I like this episode. I thought it was good. I'll have a lot more to say about it in the full cast.
Anything else where you got to get out
no,
of your system?
I don't think so.
All right.
Actually, no, one more thing.
Oh.
You know, I didn't realize how angry Jaime was at Tyrion killing Tywin.
Yes.
Last season when it happened, I thought maybe it was even part of the plan. I didn't realize how angry Jaime would be about that.
Where do you think the anger is from? Do you think it's from just outright love for his father? Do you think it's more born out of the consequences that now, I mean, the statement that his preferred way to die is in the arms of the woman he loves, which clearly is his sister still.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bronn asking the relevant question, does she feel the same way? I wonder how much Jaime is pegging this turn on their relationship on Tyrion, when it seems to me that ship had already sailed even before
too.
This. So I was just wondering how much of that is he fucked up this good thing I had going with my sister, or I loved my father, or
I thought
of both.
I really thought it was that he loved his father a lot more than we would have guessed. You know, there was nothing in their relationship. It was a somewhat antagonistic relationship for a long time, but... You know, that doesn't preclude the idea that they loved each other.
And I
know Tywin was kind of more in love with his legacy
to
a certain degree, but I think Jaime probably respected his father a lot and definitely loved him. And I was just surprised to see that coming through so much.
And I think, you know, that goes back to the season one where Tywin's butchering that deer and they're having us talk about Jaime needing to grow up, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, is that Jaime kind of lived his life thinking his father's always going to be there. And, you know, as his father got older, of course I'll settle down and I'll, you know, learn statesmanship and diplomacy and all that stuff. But now his father's gone potentially decades before anyone expected him to. And now... it's all on him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this mission to Dorne, the suicide mission to Dorne, seems entirely focused on trying to rekindle things with his sister or get back in her good graces. Mm-hmm. And also, I think he's starting to have some complicated feelings about being a father.
Okay, I can see that.
This reality of...
Maybe the killing of his children is having an effect on him as well.
sure, yeah. And it's starting to this dawning realization of, oh, I'm responsible for all this. But
yeah. Right. That's it.
Okay. Well, we'll have our full cast ready for Tuesday, where we'll have a lot of your feedback, and of course, a spoiler cast, which will be lively, I'm sure, on Friday. If you'd like to send feedback to either of those, please do so at GameOfThrones@baldmove.com. You can also get on our forums, where we helpfully partition the spoiler from the non-spoiler discussions for this show. You can talk book spoilers into one, and if you want to be a show-only watcher and not be spoiled, you can participate in the other. On our forums at forums.baldmove.com, you also can follow along all of our releases on facebook.com/baldmove and over at Twitter @baldmove. Can't wait to see what people thought about it, because again, you know, times are changing, and this was a really good episode, I thought. So
I thought so too. All right, thanks everyone for listening. I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.